Great. Well, it's lovely to be here. This is my first Keswick convention. I'm sure some of you have been here 20, 30 times before, even more probably. Just to say, before I worked at Labrie, I've been there 20 years, but I was a palliative care doctor in London, so working with terminally ill people. And so this seminar kind of has developed really from questions that I had working in palliative care, and also the kind of questions people come to Labrie with too. So we got two sessions, and today we're going to think about what and where is heaven, and then tomorrow we're going to think about participating in heaven here and now on earth. And I've rather cunningly made it so that the two seminars go into each other. So if you only come today, you'll only get half the story. So you kind of get a captive audience for tomorrow. And so you'll see where we go. And I guess you come this morning probably because you have questions about heaven, or you know someone who does. And my questions about heaven started a long, long time ago, maybe 30 years ago, when I was a medical student. And I was on an aeroplane journey to Warsaw in Poland. And I'll just read you from this experience, and then thinking about it, led me to write the book, What on Earth is Heaven? But I'll just read you what happened on this flight. And I don't like flying. I don't know if anyone else doesn't like flying. Always makes me nervous. And this time, my colleague had booked me on LOT Airlines. And that was just after the end of communism. And it didn't have a terribly good safety record. Okay. So here, I'll just read you the opening couple of paragraphs. I was a Christian. I was going to heaven. The only problem was I didn't want to go there. This sudden realization came to me as I was waiting to take off on a flight from London to Warsaw. I don't like flying. I think I would be fine if I was flying the plane, but trusting my life to someone else I don't know is another matter. So I was sitting there, imagining the plane crashing, contemplating death and what comes after death, when I suddenly realized that I didn't really want to go to heaven. I loved this life. I love the feeling of sun on my face and the taste of olives on my tongue, the comfort of a hug, the smell of freshly washed linen. I loved walking in the English countryside. I loved the colors of spring, jumping into a swimming pool on a hot day and feeling the cool water make my skin tingle. Nothing about heaven or the images of heaven I had been given excited me. Being a disembodied spirit living forever in an amorphous, shapeless future just didn't seem to have any appeal. Floating on clouds, singing praise and worship choruses for eternity just didn't attract me. This all felt wrong. Surely, as the greatest joy and fulfillment of the Christian life, I should want to go to heaven. So that was the experience that I had on the LOT Airlines flight to Warsaw. And it actually led me in that plane to pray, and I prayed two things. I said, Father in heaven, help me to understand what heaven is and help me to want to go there. And actually, this seminar and the book and everything that's come from it is really an answer to that prayer. I don't know if you find yourself in that same position, that the ideas or pictures of heaven that you have don't make it look very attractive, but rather dull and boring. It doesn't seem like a place one could spend eternity in. Being, as I had at that time, this idea that I was just going to be a soul that would kind of float up and be in this amorphous cloudscape with kind of pink fluffy cloudscape with what I call fat babies with wings. We'll see some of those in a minute. And in church, I was told we'd be worshiping God forever, which sounded like an endless church service. The American author Mark Twain said, most people can't bear sitting in church for an hour on a Sunday. How are they supposed to live somewhere very similar to it for an eternity? So I think by the laughter, I know that you are with me in feeling some of those things. But they're serious problems. I didn't grow up a Christian, so I was a fairly new Christian when I was thinking this. So what I want to suggest to us is that something is wrong. Not wrong with heaven, but maybe with our understanding of it. or certainly our imagination of it. So what I want to do in these two sessions is really explore what the Bible says about heaven to give us a much better picture of the God's good future. And with these two things in aim, one, that you would be really excited about what lies ahead of you. That's the first thing. But secondly, and this is really more tomorrow, so again, plug to come back tomorrow, is one of the main things I want to say is heaven isn't just about the future. It's not just a future reality, but it's a reality that is breaking into our lives now, right here on earth, and that we can actually participate in here on earth. So that's why tomorrow we're going to talk about participating in heaven here and now on earth. But this morning, we're going to just lay some basics and begin the Bible story. So first of all, I want to think about what and where is heaven. I want to ask you, what comes to mind when you think about heaven? What images immediately, you know, snap into your mind? What words, what feelings, what smells even, what experiences? You could just shout a few out. Shout them out loudly if you can.
Freedom.
Great, great word. Thanks. Bright. Light.
Color.
That's good. Not black and white.
Joy.
Great. Eden. That's a good one. Jesus. Did someone say Jesus? Good person over there said Jesus. By the way, I've got a free book to give away to the person who participates well or something or asks a good question. So there we go. Okay, afterwards. I like that. Jesus is a good answer. Anything else? Yeah. Sorry?
City.
A city.
God's throne.
Great.
Music.
Music. Yeah. Okay, so what was that? Better than here. Okay, great. Okay, well, let's have a look at it. Some of our, here we go. I'll go through that. Some of our images of heaven are informed, aren't they, by our culture. And we're going to watch, actually, a little video here from Ice Age 2, The Meltdown, where Scrat, do you know who Scrat is? He's the prehistoric saber-toothed squirrel. He's died. I think he's fallen off a cliff and he's died and he's going to heaven. Then he gets, I won't spoil the end. Okay, let's have a watch. And just think, see what images, common images that people have about heaven. So what some of the typical images of heaven you saw? Clouds, fluffy clouds.
Gates.
Pearly gates, golden gates. Yeah, music, sort of harpy, choir music, yeah. Angels, the thing you love the most is there. Yeah, you know, heaven is like a holiday with all the best things that you could have on earth. Yeah. Dodos. Yeah. Is that what you said?
Choirs of dodos.
Oh, choirs of dodos. Yeah, with wings. With wings. Well, they've got wings anyway, haven't they? Okay. So, okay. I was trying to think about, for myself, all the images and the things that had informed my idea of heaven and our ideas of heaven. We used to go on family holidays to Italy, and this is the dome of the cathedral in Florence, depicting heaven. I don't know, what does that say to you about heaven, if you can see it at all? It's crowded. People always say that. It's very crowded, isn't it? Yeah. There's levels. Great. Thank you very much. There's levels, isn't there? There's a hierarchy. I think that's to do with the medieval imagination of these seven circles of heaven. You know, there's or seven or nine layers of hell, purgatory, and heaven. They each have seven layers. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks very much. That's a great observation. It's way up there. And if you're standing, you can imagine standing in the cathedral. You're sort of in the dark down here, and it is way up there. You know, I don't know how, 100 feet up, beautiful painting. But it is far, far away. And it's also populated by these, which I call fat babies with wings. But I think they're called putti or cupids, which get confused with cupids somewhere along the line, don't they? Angels and cupids, cherubs. Kind of, I actually found in the British Museum what a cherubim should look like, which is this. A guardian of a temple. This is probably what a cherubim should look like. And one of the things about the cathedral is it has a glass dome. This cathedral in Florence has a glass dome at the top. And, you know, you sort of just go up and disappear into the light. And that's heaven. So, these ideas that it's up there, it's far away, it's very separate from life down here on earth. Some high culture pictures I'm going to share with you next. The Simpsons, again, it's the same idea. We're going up, we're going somewhere, we're getting away from the earth. Thomas Kincaid, the American kind of Christian artist, again, this is called Stairway to Paradise. And this one is called All Dogs Go to Heaven. It's, again, this idea of this stairway, and you're leaving the earth to go somewhere. This is one painted by a teenager, or was a teenager, who had visions of heaven. It's populated by white horses with wings, which I guess is probably a teenager's view of, or a horsey teenager's view of heaven. And we often get this, don't we? A celestial city. But, you know, these ideas that I had, they all left me with this idea, well, heaven is kind of, it's up there, isn't it? It's far away. It doesn't really have a relationship with life now on earth. And it's like an escape theory. You know, we have to escape earth. We have to escape the material world. We escape our bodies and get somewhere up there. And heaven. Now, what I want to suggest to you actually is that all these ideas we've just talked about are what I call have within them a dualism. Now, a dualism just means like a split in reality, splitting into two things. But they have a kind of in them an implicit dualism between heaven and earth. And the kind of heaven and earth are often seen as opposites to one another. So it might work something like this. Heaven is a spiritual place. Earth is a material one. Okay, heaven is to do with these things, the divine, the eternal. It's unchanging and perfect and real. Whereas the earth is human, it's temporary, it's ephemeral, it's an illusion, and it's fallen. And often in this kind of split, this dualism between heaven and earth, we might say this, that heaven is good, but the material world, the earth, is evil or bad. And we might even say about ourselves that we have this same split within us, that we have a soul, which is the spiritual part, and then we have a body, which is the material part. And in this dualism, the life cycle of being a human is a bit like this. So this is from, who knows what film this is? Disney Pixar's Soul. It's a really good film. It has fantastic jazz in it, and it's very, very funny. But it has within it this kind of life cycle of the human. So we start off, top left, we start off as souls in heaven, disembodied souls. And then the soul comes down to earth and gets stuck in a body. And our body is just this vehicle that we sort of borrow for a time. But it's in the fallen world, not very nice world. And actually, the spiritual path is that our soul should be liberated again from the body and returned to heaven. Okay? And lots of people have this kind of idea about what a human being is, that we're and the spiritual path is it's an inner life where we focus on the soul, the inner things of the spiritual life, not on the world around us. And if we do that enough, we will get to heaven. Now, what I want to say to you is that this is not a Christian worldview, this one. This is not Christianity, and this is not what the Bible teaches. In fact, it's an idea that comes from these philosophers and from other places, but called the Neoplatonists. They were around in the 3rd and 4th centuries AD, and they taught this kind of dualism, spirit-matter dualism. And in the book, I go much more into that. We could talk more about it. But they actually had quite a strong influence on the church at various times, the medieval church and on Renaissance Christianity. And so you can still see this kind of dualism at work, okay? There's a kind of an inner spiritual non-material world that's the opposite to the material world. And you might see it outside the church in things like, I don't know if you've watched Amazon Upload. Anybody watch that? A few people, yeah. It's obviously not their most popular series, but I can see it's an interesting idea. Basically, what happens is before you die, just before you die, you can have your consciousness uploaded into a digital heaven. And according to how much money you've paid into your insurance plan, you get a different heaven. heaven looks like, at the top, this, it's like an American golf club and hotel. That's what heaven looks like, okay? But actually, this is the idea of many utopian, kind of techno-utopians, that one day we'll be able to get rid of our bodies and upload our consciousness into computers and live forever. But actually, you also see this type of thinking in things like some of the modern philosophy behind transgenderism. In the transgender, the idea is that the real me is the inner me, what I feel and think about myself, whereas my outer bodily me isn't the real me, it's not my real sex. My real gender is within me, which is a similar kind of, do you see that? A similar dualism between a kind of, yeah, between a material and certainly a spiritual consciousness. Now, but you might also see it inside the church, actually. This might be a bit controversial, but I want to say to you that I think the idea, if someone said, what are you doing as a Christian? And you said, I'm saving souls for heaven. I suggest that that is actually too small of what we're doing as Christians. Because we'll see in a minute that we're not just, God is not just saving souls for a cloudy heaven. He's doing something else. What is he doing? Well, Paul says this. He says, God, in Ephesians, God made known the mystery of his will according to his purposes, according to his good pleasure, which he purposed in Christ. And then he says, what is God's will? It doesn't say to save souls for heaven. Paul says to bring all things in heaven and on earth under Christ. So the gospel is much, much bigger than just the idea that God is saving some disembodied part of us to float up to some pink fluffy clouds populated by fat babies with wings. There's something much, much more exciting going on in the universe than that. Christ is bringing all things in heaven and on earth together under himself. So, let's think a little bit more about heaven itself, and let's think about, I'm going to start with an odd question of, where is heaven? I wonder what you would say if you have a five-year-old child or grandchild, and they asked you, where is heaven? What would you say to a 65-year-old astrophysicist who asked you, where is heaven? The first man in space was Yuri Gagarin. This is Yuri Gagarin. Does anyone know Russian, what it says? There's no God. Boga nyet, yeah, no God. That's right, well done, Russian. And this was 1961, the first man in space, Russian cosmonaut, and he said, I looked and I looked and I looked, but I didn't see God. And it was obviously a piece of propaganda, aimed at saying, look, our rational scientism has overcome superstitious myth. But actually, I don't think anybody expected him to find God up there, and especially the people of the Bible. They didn't expect Yuri Gagarin to find God up there. So just to give you a couple of verses, for example, this is from Solomon, says in 2 Chronicles 2:6, who is able to build a temple for him, for God, since the heavens, even the highest heavens, cannot contain him? And Paul says something very similar when he's talking to the Athenians. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and he doesn't live in temples built by human hands, and he's not served by human hands. He doesn't need anything, Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath. So the people of the Bible knew that God wasn't up there in, no, just above the clouds, up there above the clouds, in space. They knew that God had created space and time. We live in four dimensions, don't we? What are the four dimensions that we live in? Three of them are the dimensions of space, and one is time. Great. And the three dimensions of space are height and width and length, aren't they, or something like that. Okay, so we're going to do some dimensional theory. Now, you're not in a Christopher Nolan sci-fi movie right now, but you might have to just, I'm going to do a few little thought experiments with you, okay? So we live in four dimensions, and God created those four dimensions, and he is not within them himself. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Okay, so what then is heaven? Heaven is not a place within the four dimensions, because God, who is in heaven, created those four dimensions. So I was really struggling with a word to think about. What is heaven? How can I describe this? And I think I probably stole this from Tom Wright's wonderful book, Surprised by Hope. And he uses the word, maybe I came to the word at the, you know, around the same time, but I thought this is, heaven is a dimension. Okay, of reality. It's if you like, the most real dimension. It's a bigger dimension. It's not a place or a location, because those are always within space, and God created space. So it's bigger than that. It's a dimension. Maybe this is why science cannot find heaven, because science only studies the material universe. So what dimension is heaven? Every dimension has a quality. Time has the quality. What is the quality of time? This is a difficult question. Yeah, sequence or something like that, isn't it? Sequence. And the dimension of space is place, really, isn't it? Something is located, a location maybe. So I asked myself, what is the quality of heaven? What is the Bible? How does the Bible actually conceive of it? If it's not a place, what is it? It's a dimension, but what's the quality? And someone over here said, when they thought of heaven, throne. And actually, when you look at the Bible, the most often described way of heaven is a throne. Heaven is my throne. We think, or 2 Chronicles 18, I saw the Lord sitting on his throne with all the multitudes of heaven. So what does a throne say to you? Rule, great. Sorry, you have to say. Leadership. Majesty. Power. Yes, that's right, yeah. A throne is where a king or queen sits, isn't it? And they speak their will, and their will is done. That's what a throne is, isn't it? The king says, you know, I want to raise taxes or something, and then people go out, the tax collectors, and collect more tax. Or he might say, I want people to have more fun. And then people go out and create more fun. But what is, so heaven, it's the most important thing is the throne, and the throne is a symbol, isn't it, of God's word and his will and where his will is done. And in fact, In the New Testament, when it uses the word the kingdom of heaven, it's interesting, actually, the Greek probably is closer to the kingship of heaven. So a kingdom is like a place, isn't it? But a kingship is more a rule, a quality, where the will is done. So this is what I want to give us as a thought about. Heaven is the dimension of reality where God's will is done, okay? So they're the dimensions of earth, the four, and this dimension where God's will is done. Now, what I want to do now is to really explore the story, the biblical story of heaven and earth, using this idea of dimensions. Okay, so it might seem weird to you, but stick with me. I hope it'll make sense. We'll try and have like at least 10 minutes of Q&A at the end. We'll have a microphone, and Jonty's very kindly will come around, and I'd love to take some questions. Okay, so we're going to think now about the biblical story of heaven and earth. And as we start, I think there's just two really important things to think about. When we think about the Bible story from Genesis to Revelation, it is not the story that starts on earth and ends in heaven. It's a story that starts with creation and ends with new creation. Okay, so the story isn't from earth to heaven. It starts with creation and ends in new creation. The other thing that really struck me when I started to think about the Bible was that actually all the movements in the Bible are not about sort of us or people going up to heaven. They're actually about heaven coming down to earth. And we'll see that in a minute, how that's happening. Okay, so let's think about where the story starts. The story starts with creation. And it starts with dimensions united. I'll show you this in a minute. So in Genesis 1, we read how God, in the beginning, created the heavens and the earth, created the four dimensions of material reality out of nothing. And in 6 days, he orders that creation. In the 6 days, he forms spaces like the sky and the land, and then the sea and the land, and then he fills those spaces. Now, really significant, after each of those days, and on the last day, God says it was good, and it was very good. Now, this tells us something so important about the world in which we live and about ourselves, is that the material world is good. It is not a mistake, okay? Many religions, the material world is a mistake. Sometimes it's a burp or even a fart that the gods produced, and it leads this world, or it comes out of conflict. But actually, in the Christian story, the material universe comes out of the considered loving will of God, and it's good. So that means that matter is good, space and time are good, the earth is good, nature is good, human bodies are good in the original way that God made things to be. And God blessed them and said, be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth and order it. So God really asks us to do this. Okay, now this is going to just bear with me again. I want to use these diagrams. Do you remember your maths classes? Some of you it's further away than others, but some it's closer. Okay, do you remember Venn diagrams? Yeah, great. You remember Venn diagrams. Okay, so Venn diagrams. Here I've got a Venn diagram, okay, of heaven, which I've tried to make look 3D, not very good at PowerPoint, and then earth, okay? And God creates Adam and Eve and puts them in Eden, in this garden. And Eden is the touching place of heaven and earth because it is a place on earth where God's will is done. Does that make sense? So if heaven is the dimension of God's will, then Eden is the place on earth where God's will is done. So it is a touching, a meeting place of heaven and earth. Okay, that's why it's in the middle bit of the overlap of the Venn diagram. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay, great. You're with me. Good. Excellent. Okay, we've all got our maths going. Now, the purpose of human beings is to do this, is to make the whole earth a heavenly place. The whole earth, a dimension of heaven where God's will is done. So that's what, in that verse we just saw, when God says, fill the earth and order it, he says, go out from Eden and make the whole earth a place of beauty and wonder and order and fruitfulness, just as Eden is. And that's the dignity he gives human beings. It's the mission he gives us. And if you think about what that would involve, if we hadn't fallen, we'll look at the fall in a minute, but it would involve all the things, actually, of human life. farming and irrigation. So there's a bit of land that's not very productive because it doesn't have any water. So they could dig an irrigation channel to bring water and maybe invent a spade to help dig the channel. Engineering, technology, inventing things, clothing. So you could go into environments that where you need clothing, like up on the lake, up on the fells in the, well, maybe even today you need clothing, don't you? Creativity and art, family life, education, all these things were in God's plan for his world. This is the spiritual task that God has given us, not taking us away from the world, but into the world. That's the spiritual task. So I think of it being sometimes a little bit like this. This is a picture of the Eden Project down in Cornwall, where they've, you know, have you seen those, where they got these geodesic domes? You know, you could say, like, inside is the perfect environment. But God says to Adam and Eve, kind of, you know, take what you've learnt and seen and the beauty and make the whole earth just as beautiful, okay? So that's the mission God gives us. Now, what happens when you add the dimension of heaven to the earth? Okay, now, here, I want you even more mathematical brain teasing. Okay, this is a square, isn't it? This is a two-dimensional thing. So what happens when you add a third dimension to that? It becomes a great, wow, you're really on fire today, mathematically. Okay, and how many times, now here's a prize question, how many times can you fit a square into a cube? An infinite number. Absolutely right. I think that's right. Last time I did this lecture, there was a professor of physics there, and he looked doubtfully at me when I said that. But anyway, I don't know. Okay. So, when you add another dimension, it makes something so much richer and deeper and fuller and more glorious. Maybe that's what the dimension of heaven is doing to the earth, is making it more glorious and weighty. Let's do another mind exercise here. If you think of, this is my table, kitchen table at home, it's in space. I could tell you how high it is and long it is and wide it is, and I could tell you the GPS location of where it is in Hampshire. But if I added time to it, what would now happen to the table? What extra things would that introduce to the table?
History.
Fantastic. History. Yeah, food, yes, eating. It's not just a table. It's things happen there, birthday parties and celebrations and evening meals. It's got history. It's related to fashion, isn't it? And, yeah, anything else?
Aging,
thank you. Yeah, you could say once it was a tree. Maybe sometime it will be soot and ash. I don't know, you know, do you see what I mean? You know, so it adds a whole lot of depth when you add a dimension. It adds relationship to it, birthday parties, memories, fashions, all kinds of things. The meaning increases of the table when you add a dimension, okay? So maybe this is what heaven is doing to the earth. Now, sometimes in our fallen world, we even get glimpses of this glory that comes, is all around us, but we can't see. This is on the left from the moment in 2 Kings 6 when Elisha opens his servant's eyes to see that there's much more going on in reality. There's a whole army that is with them. Or on the right-hand side, the transfiguration, when the disciples suddenly see there's so much more to Jesus than just his earthliness. I have a friend, a professor of photography, who takes photographs which I think help us see this reality. Shall I just show you some of them? I'll go through them and allow you to have a look for a few seconds, and then just you could say, what do you see? These are all taken either at the Swedish Library or the English Library. This is the bathrooms at the English Library. They're not the greatest bathrooms, but something's happened to them. This is in our chapel at the English Library, which used to be a cow barn. What did you see? What did you see in those photos? What do you think is he's capturing?
Light.
Light, yeah. Color.
Shadow.
Shapes. Yes, wonderful shapes there, aren't there? Yes, that's lovely. Whoops, where do we go? Yeah, sorry, I'm going, got to go up. Yeah, windows, yeah. It's like a doorway, that one, isn't it, almost? Yeah.
What a,
yeah, yeah, I love this. It's kind of like, it's almost like she's got a, you know, an aura, glory around her, the glory of being human. Someone's got their hand up there. The light source is outside the picture. Thank you. Yeah. You may be getting the book. I don't know. No, sorry. I shouldn't promise it to you. We'll see what happens. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. And also, they're also ordinary things, aren't they? Ordinary things transfigured by something beyond themselves. I think that's what we see. I love this. I'm just going to read you a little bit. Oh, I'm going to run out of time, aren't we? We're going to run out of time. Anyway, okay. I love this bit. Do you know Marilyn Robinson's book, Gilead? Anybody read that? Her novel, Gilead? Yeah, if you haven't, do read it. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. And it's the story of a pastor. He's an elderly man who's actually got married very late in life and has a young son who's kind of 6 years old, but he's coming to the end of his life. And he writes these letters to his son so his son can read them later on when he's passed away. But in one of the letters, he says this: "It has seemed to me sometimes as though the Lord breathes on this poor gray ember of creation and it turns to radiance for a moment or a year or the span of a life. And then it sinks back into itself again. And to look at it, no one would know it had anything to do with fire or light. That is what I said in a Pentecost sermon. I've reflected on that sermon, and there is some truth in it." And then I love this bit. "But the Lord is more constant and far more extravagant than it seems to imply. Wherever you turn your eyes, the world can shine like transfiguration. You don't have to bring a thing to it except a little willingness to see. Only who could have the courage to see it?" I think, my friends, if you are a Christian here today, we should have the courage to see transfiguration, shouldn't we? In around us, in everything, really, and imagine transfiguration. Okay. So that's creation. Now, I just want to talk about two other things, and then we'll finish today and think about some questions. So moving the Bible story on, we've had creation and now fall. And I want to suggest to you that what happens in the fall is that the dimensions become divided, okay? So the Venn diagram, the two circles have sprung apart or been pushed apart. Because what Adam and Eve do, what we do, is we reject the will of God. They didn't trust him about the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and they ate it. And they just said, "We don't want God. We don't want his will." This is what we say too. We want to do it ourselves. And if God's will is the dimension of heaven, then what's happening here is we're saying, we don't want that. We just want to live as if the earth is all there is. I think that's the definition of being worldly. Being worldly is not loving football. I love football. It's not loving olives. I love olives. I know some people don't, but lots of people do. The proper people do. We love olives. You know, it's not loving, you know, the beauty of this countryside surrounding us. That's not what worldly means. Worldly means living as if the earth is all that there is and there's nothing more beyond it. And this is what happens when Adam and Eve reject the will of God. They live as if the earth is all there is. And then what happens is, rather than this expansion of dimensions getting richer and fuller, I think dimensions contract. So here we have, this is a cube. If you take away a dimension, it becomes a square, and then it becomes a line, and then it becomes a point, yes. God is three. Three in one, but three. A wonderful relationships. Satan is one who would consume everything into himself. So that's where the Bible goes next, isn't it? And in these reducing dimensions, going out into the world and trying to live as if everything is our will and in our power, then we've created a hell on earth. So what God then does in his grace is he opens doorways between dimensions. Okay? God loves us and he loves the earth that he's created. And so he opens these doorways between dimensions. Now, can you think of some doorways between dimensions that are in the Old Testament? Okay, Old Testament only for now. Jacob's ladder, brilliant, well done.
Isaiah 6.
Yes, Isaiah is raised up, yeah, between heaven and earth, that's a good one. Okay, great, Ezekiel, yeah. The temple, brilliant, the temple. Wonderful. Okay, all of these are touching places or doorways between heaven and earth. Now, first of all, the Bible starts with this doorway, which is interesting, which is one that humans try to build, the Tower of Babel. As if we can get to heaven, you know, we can build up. That's what they're trying to do. Let us build a tower so we can reach the heavens. That is what all human religion is about. But God does something else. In Jacob's ladder, it is God who opens the door. Jacob is actually on the run. He's not even looking for God. Isn't that wonderful? When you're on the run, God may be coming after you. It's not about us finding God, but he comes to find us. He finds Jacob. And Jacob has this dream. And Led Zeppelin have written a song about it, which is called Stairway to Heaven, okay? Wonderful song, but they got the idea wrong. Because it's not a stairway to heaven, it's a stairway from heaven. Brilliant. Because when Jacob wakes up from the dream, he doesn't say, wow, God opened a doorway and I can go up to heaven and get away from this terrible place. He says, no, surely God is in this place on earth. This is the gate of heaven. And that changes Jacob's life. Okay. I love this artwork. Anna Freeman Bentley. It was in Chichester Cathedral. And it's an installation of Jacob's ladder. But she makes the point, this is a stairway from heaven. And I love that there. Okay. So we see these doorways here. The burning bush, that could be one. God giving the law on Mount Sinai to help restore chaos, to help restore order to chaos, an ordered world. And then the temple. And the temple is the ultimate doorway in the Old Testament, because the temple is this place. Again, it's not like go into the temple and get sucked up into heaven. It's where God is present on earth, like he was in Eden, in the midst of his people, speaking his word, his will, that his people do, and then they are a light to the Gentiles, to the other nations. Do you see that? So it's not that, it's that movement, down and outwards. Okay, that is what the temple is all about. But as we read in the Old Testament, the people keep turning away from God. They keep turning to their own will. And eventually Ezekiel sees this vision of the glory of God leaving the temple. And then it's destroyed by the Babylonians later on. And so heaven and earth are separated. And I'm just going to leave you with a teaser for tomorrow, okay, of the next bit of the story. Because we wait 400 years and then God opens a new doorway between heaven and earth. What do you think that is? Who do you think? Jesus, yeah. I love this picture. Oh, you can see it. This is Rembrandt's The Adoration of the Shepherds in the National Gallery in London. And what do you notice about this picture? The light is coming from Jesus, from the baby, isn't it? And lighting up their faces. It's a doorway. Jesus is this doorway through which heaven is coming to earth. So this is where I want to leave you. The man in whom dimensions meet. Jesus is 100% God and 100% human. Which means reality is 200%. Yeah. That means there's much more to reality than we can even imagine. Jesus is the heavenly man, as Paul calls him. Heavenly man. Heaven and earth united together in one man. I love this picture of the breastfeeding Jesus, because it says something, doesn't it, about his heavenliness. He's got the halo, but he's breastfeeding. There's nothing more human than being a needy baby with dirty nappies and needing milk. And that's what God does. So in God himself, it's an amazing thing. God welds himself together with matter. Okay? So there's no dualism, spirit, matter, heaven, earth. They're united in Jesus in one amazing reality. And then Jesus is baptized. This is what I'm finishing with. Jesus says, and when he's baptized, it's interesting. Mark says, it's John the Baptist's words, I saw heaven torn open. And we all got sucked up. No, he doesn't say that, does he? He says, heaven was torn open and the Spirit came down and there's the waters. Now, what does that remind you of? Spirit, water, creation. So Mark is telling us something is happening here that is new creation. It's not getting sucked up to heaven. It's heaven coming down to earth to make new creation. Okay, that's where I'm going to finish. And good, we could take some questions. John T's got a microphone. There's someone right at the back there. Okay, I'll do my best to answer them. And okay.
Will we have birthmarks in heaven? I'm sporting a sort of purpley blue one at the moment.
Okay, will we have birthmarks in heaven? That is a really good question. Tomorrow I may talk more about that. But I think there's some interesting things that, as Mark said, if you were there last night, we will be ourselves. And we're going to look. Actually, can I do a correction to that? I think we shouldn't talk about heaven. We shouldn't say, I'm going to heaven, or will I have birthmarks in heaven? We should talk about new creation. Because the Bible doesn't say we're going to heaven. It says the whole universe is heading to new creation in Jesus Christ. So maybe we could rephrase it and say, will we have birthmarks in new creation? And definitely in new creation, you will be you. And all the things, I think, that are idiosyncratic about you will still be you, because those are you and your bodies. And we think of Jesus, we could think of Jesus when Jesus is resurrected as one of the greatest signs of new creation. He still has the marks on him, doesn't he? Of, in some senses, you know, I don't think new creation is where we forget what's happened on earth or it's undone, but it may be seen in a new perspective. I once had people who are deaf ask, will we still be deaf in heaven? Because actually it's such a strong part of our identity and our community. So, you know, I think that things that are parts of our individuality, who we are, will be redeemed wonderfully. But, you know, I like Mark yesterday talked about, didn't he? He talked about transformed continuity. I like that idea. Great. Okay, there's someone else at the back, John T, wasn't there, over in this corner, I think.
Yeah. Is it better to see the maths as 10,000%, as in 100 times 100?
Ooh.
Because when you multiply something, you get much more than you just add.
Yeah, I like that, yes. An exponential increase. Yeah, I think that's a beautiful idea of an exponential increase. Yeah, thank you. Great. My maths isn't that good. I was a doctor. You didn't know much maths, really. Okay, there's one here, and then, John T, you could come down the front. There's someone down here as well. Yeah, after this one.
Mine you might not be able to answer, but I'm intrigued by this Venn diagram of heaven and earth and the overlap being Eden. And I kind of noted that you seem to have earth as a more flat circle.
Yeah.
That's not just it, though. But I'm kind of like wondering about the rest of earth that's not overlapping with heaven. I kind of think, was that not good then?
Yeah.
Or was there nobody there? Or was God not present there?
That's a great question. Yeah. So, I had you in the creation picture, the Venn diagram, heaven and earth and overlapping in Eden. I think if you read the Bible closely, what you don't see is what I'd been taught a lot, or what I thought a lot, was that kind of God created the whole earth, like this perfect sort of place, just wham, de novo. And then you think, well, what do we do as human beings? It's like, stand still, don't spoil anything in case, you ruin it. I think the picture is, in the Bible, it's interesting that Eden is given a specific geographical location on earth, okay? And it's this garden that God creates where his will is done, right? But then, this is the beauty and dignity. He says to Adam and Eve and then to humanity, now, take my will into all the earth. Fill it and order it. Do you see that? So he gives us a job to do, a task. Serve the creation and protect it, is what he says in Genesis 2. Serve it and protect it. So I think that is what you could call the creation mandate or the cultural mandate, is actually that it's not that it's not good, but I would say outside Eden, it's not that it's not good, but it's not yet all that God wants it to be. But God says, I'm not going to do it myself. I want to give human beings the dignity of doing that. And actually, you see that pattern repeated, because when Jesus ascends, he says, I'm not going to do everything myself. I want you to do it as the church. And maybe, the fullness of the new creation will be the same. Great. Yeah, should we take a question down here? And then, hello.
Hello. I just want to ask, if heaven is the new creation, will we remember people who are in hell, our loved ones who are, when we're in heaven, because we believe in Jesus Christ, would we remember the people in heaven?
That is a really great question. Thank you. I haven't talked about hell yet, but I will. And in the book it was a chapter, but it had to come down to about half a chapter because of the length of the book. It was actually the most difficult thing to write about in the whole book. And I cried twice doing it, once because it was so hard to write it, and once, because of the reality that not everyone will accept Jesus' gift of new creation. I think that in the new creation, for those who've trusted in Christ, I think our perspective of things will change. I don't think we'll lose our memory, because our memory is part of what is us, isn't it? Our memory of things. And of course, we love, there's people we very much love. But all I can say is I think that our perspective of things will change. Do you see what I mean? So that now we see things, if you like, in a two-dimensional way. And then we will eventually see there's so much more to what has happened. And we'll see, I think the strongest thing we will ever see is that God will not shut anyone out of his good future by mistake or by accident or anything like that. God is incredibly gracious, don't we? We see in the Bible, as I've talked about, God coming to people who are on the run, And most of the people are great big fat sinners in the Bible, aren't they? And yet God comes to them, and he's incredibly gracious. Jesus goes to the prostitutes, the tax collectors, those people. He goes and seeks them out, not the religious people. So God is very, very gracious. But there are some people who will refuse. And I think, C.S. Lewis, when he writes about hell in The Problem of Pain, he says actually the doors of hell are locked on the inside. Do you get what I mean? So that it's not God shutting people out, but it's people refusing his grace. So yeah, I don't know if that helps you, but anyway, there's more in the book. And if anybody does buy it and finds me, I will sign it. I'd love to do that and meet you. Jonty, have we got time for...
Last one.
Okay, over here. We've got last one. Sorry about that.
Thanks for your seminar. It's been really helpful.
Thank you.
Also made me think about the Lord's Prayer when we pray, your will be done on earth as in heaven. Would you say that that's a good way to maybe apply what you've been teaching us?
Yeah.
Thinking about how to pray God's will into earth.
Yes.
But seeing heaven not so much as a physical place like you're saying.
Yeah.
But a dimension of where God's will is done.
Yeah, you could get my prize because you've basically summarized tomorrow's seminar for me. You can have it. Well done. That's absolutely right. I think it's notable, isn't it, in the Lord's Prayer that it puts together the kingdom and the will. It says, you know, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. So it puts the two together. Do you see the kingdom and the will? And then it says, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We don't say, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, may we escape up to heaven. He said, may your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And that's the prayer. And tomorrow what I'm going to talk about, actually, which is even more weird, which is how you, if you are a Christian, are a doorway between heaven and earth. And you are where God is present on earth, a temple. And, you know, that same thing. Do you remember I talked about the temple? It's that movement down and out. And you are a meeting place of heaven and earth. But, yeah, supposed to, tomorrow I'm going to talk about how we can participate in bringing heaven to our square inch of the earth. You know, not we can't save the whole world, thankfully. We don't have to do that. Jesus is doing that. But our square inch, you know, that we love and that we participate in and where we are, we can be a part of bringing heaven to that. Yeah, wonderful. Good. Okay, we're at time. So maybe see you tomorrow. And if you want to ask more questions, I will be around here. Thanks very much. Okay.